Okay, are we ready to go? Call our meeting to order. Welcome, Mr. Preston.
Good morning.
Got all kinds of stuff for us. Are you first?
He is first. Now, how much time are we going to give him?
All he wants.
No, but he'll take it all.
6 minutes, please. Times 10.
What reason you asked that question?
We got other stuff.
Yeah.
We have, what we did different today, Frank, was we listed a bunch of things.
I saw that.
Okay. Yep. And knowing we always short you on time, we didn't want to think that you got all the time.
We want to go in order of what's on the agenda?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. We can do that and get those out of the way, and if you like.
Let's do that. Keep in mind, that gives you a chance to organize your paper better.
Right.
It'll be faster that way because we know what time we have to stop. How's that? Under administrative, can I talk about that one first?
Surely.
You saw talking to the maintenance guys upstairs.
Yes.
What has happened is that their heater has failed. They have patched it temporarily with asbestos and some furnace tape, but it's now leaking some fumes, and they want it replaced, which I think we all agree that it needs to be replaced. The replacement of the 13-year-old furnace is going to cost right at $3,500. Replacement is $5,700. That's parts and labor. The parts part is about $4,000 to $4,500 or so. Labor to get the new one would be the difference, which would be about $1,700 or so. This qualifies under the emergency, so if we wanted to order it through purchasing, under the constitutes as emergency, we can do it, but we also believe the material, just the furnace itself, will be under the $4,500 limit, which is all we have to price out anyway. But it's a oil burner out there.
Used oil.
Where's it at?
Mechanic shop.
Recycle
center.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it for a while, and it's kind of out of my memory. I know it's an oil burner.
It's high. It's ceiling hung.
Ceiling hung. They would need a backhoe to rehang the new. Take that one down and rehang the new one.
And did it burn? Just burn through after all that time?
Yeah, 13 years. The middle chamber. He said that's the problem. He said we've wrapped it with asbestos.
Right.
And then put some sleeves of other pipe on there. He said it's getting us by, but the fumes are starting to leak out.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing, since it's an oil burn, they can burn about anything in it. That's why they like it.
Yeah.
Kind of dual purpose for us.
The only question that I had was, since you answered the question about emergency, which is a good thing.
That's why I talked to Linda real fast.
Certainly applies, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Is maybe we should ask her to, just in good measure, hit the internet for used oil furnaces and see if there's somebody else around.
We can direct her to definitely get
spend 30 minutes or something to make a few phone calls. Be sure there's not somebody out there that the mechanics didn't know about or something.
Sure. No, that's not a problem. I will direct, if you want me to, I'll direct Linda to do that then after this. And
I would be
at the next break we get for that.
That's double lined, isn't it? It's the way it operates. And under
three chamber? I mean, I know a double liner versus it's a three chamber scenario.
What I was wondering is if if they can locate something that can be fabricated. We've got whatchamacallit out there that's.
He said it's. The whole center chamber, yeah, it's past the patch.
But, I mean, if there is something that somebody has, if she goes online and it's a used one, if it's got, like,
that's the 3,500, it fixes that one chamber.
Yeah.
That's all the,
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay, so that.
Go forth.
Next one is, I met with Akers and Arning yesterday. Just, they had brought by the Cox documentation that we, Meryl, during the conversation we had with Vicki on the phone, she was throwing numbers out and all that. Those numbers were through October and didn't include November numbers. And so there was, in response to an article that was written, Cox felt like they were unfairly represented in the paper. And they decided to give Bill and John the numbers. And then Bill and John went through the numbers with me, and I have copies for you guys. What they've asked is after we review the numbers, if we would be supportive of a letter of clarification that we could maybe read or submit to the press just for clarifying the some of the numbers, because it was reported that there was $300,000 to $400,000 profit for Cox projected in 2009, and it appears that Cox is going to actually lose about 4% now, because November numbers weren't in there. And with the December pending claims they haven't processed yet, which we might or might not in the next 10 days, they may even lose more than that. So they have all the supporting documentation from Cox, so that if we, and I guess what I should, we, I feel like we need to do something for clarification. Not make a big deal, but I thought because of the confusion last time of doing it verbally, we may want to write it and just maybe read it on a Monday morning so that there would be no misunderstanding of numbers, because that seemed to confuse one reporter. And I'll be honest, it kind of confused me at times too, because there are so many numbers. And anyway, I have those copies for you. I'd like you guys to think about maybe doing a letter and then just being prepared for a Monday morning, if it's, you know, this Monday, next Monday, whatever. Just in response to us thinking about being a good neighbor and a good, we don't want to close that door. We only have two options in this area. There's only so many hospitals and plans that we can use, and we certainly want to make sure our options are available every year. So anyway, think about that, guys, and I'll have copies for you upstairs.
I knew through seeing Bill Budnick that was in the works, and I approve, and I'd like to see us do it by Monday if we could.
Okay.
Get it done.
Get a letter written or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
While it's still fresh on the public's mind.
We can definitely put this together in a document. It doesn't have to be too elaborate, but it needs to be accurate.
Yeah.
So, the next thing I wanted to bring up is the Verizon contract stuff as it's posted on the agenda. With the changeover of the current plan that we run with the countywide cell plan is under Altel. And it's a non-government plan, what they call GSA, government plan. I can't remember I think it's government service, but I don't remember. Anyway, with the changeover, Verizon is in the process of wanting us to, let me go back a little bit. During the changeover from Altel to Verizon, something that was unexpected was some of the coverage has got worse for the Altel users. And Nikki is logging all the complaints, and Gary and Gary and Nikki are working on the complaint side of it. Don works on the administrative of the payment and all that, which is slowly working out. However, the complaints are going up. And so in response to that, they checked into it and found out that the Altel phones on the Verizon towers coverage is not as good as Verizon phones on the Verizon towers. So what they've come back to us is wanting us to change our plan to a Verizon government plan. Now, anytime you sign a plan, it's a two-year contract, government style, which means we all understand what that means. But we would restart the clock again. So this is what we have now. I just want to run it through you, and I have copies for you guys on this too. Currently, we have 20 Blackberries, 27 phones, and then one PC card, which is Bob's card when he's mobile and all that. We are currently paying an average around $2,350. With the new government plan, that number would go from $2,350 to $1,852. So it would be a savings of $500 a month. In exchange, they would trade in all of our Altel phones to Verizon phones and give us a trade-in for those. So everyone would get free phones again. New Blackberries, but Verizon Blackberries versus Altel Blackberries, and then they would actually trade them in and apply that to this. So transaction-wise, I believe the number is we would get $600 in trade-in on all the phones, plus our monthly would go down by $500. Okay?
No, that's not all right. I'm not following you.
Okay.
Are the phones free plus the $500?
Yep.
Lower cost?
How it's explained to me, their phones are free, plus we get a trade-in. They really want us on the Verizon phones.
Okay, got you.
Okay. That's how they're talking to us now. They also, with the Verizon phones, they also offer a push-to-talk feature, which Frank is checking into. We can add that feature later, add those phones later.
Like for the transfer station.
For the transfer station, some key road and bridge guys. What happened, though, at that point, Nikki and I started looking, and Nikki had already talked to Rob, the Verizon rep, and Gary. We have some, and then I got some reports from Rick's office. We've got some people we really, at this point, probably need to really seriously look at our reimbursement policy and plan. Because some road and bridge guys, it may be cheaper for us to give them a push-to-talk or a cell phone than reimburse them the $26. Or we just need to look at why we're reimbursing certain people. Once again, that hasn't, we can add it any time. We just don't, we can't decrease from this number of what we got. Am I explaining myself? So push to talk is something that Frank's checking into. There has been a request that we add 4 BlackBerries to the IT. There's 4 people in IT that are, let's say, 40 to 50% of the time never in their office, and people have got their cell phones and calling them all the time. They're not set up for reimbursement, and so they've never got reimbursement set up. One time we ran through those, we did that reimbursement during that move, so they're not getting reimbursed, and they're not, we don't have BlackBerries, so we need to address that. That's, once again, not necessary now, but though that's, we have some flexibility, obviously, in the plan. The reason I say all those things is this. Originally, when we set this plan up, we had budgeted or bought or pre-bought 14,000 minutes that everyone shared. Okay, we have, the most we've ever used is back in August, and we used 9,000 of those key minutes. Everything else is free. So we have an avenue, an opportunity to lower those minutes also if we don't add the phones. If we add the phones, we need to leave the number where we are. Am I all explaining myself properly here? So we don't have to make a decision today, but there is, the only thing that's pressing us right now is some bad coverage in different areas of the county because of this Altel Verizon changeover. Plus, if we made the changeover, it would save us $500 a month, which on the surface sounds like a great thing to do. So,
comments? Ready?
I'm ready.
Well, I've had, it seems like I don't have very good service at Taneyville. Them flats and this and that. And so I stopped in at AT&T just by accident, so to speak. It was right there across from Lowe's Saturday. So I stopped in there for a few minutes. And they gave me a plan. And my question is, I want to know how your phone works around. And do you have one that you'll rent me for a day or something? Or, I don't have that, but they'll go out and do a survey with you. I guess that's just free talk there. I don't know why I said all that. But the bottom line is,
Verizon's doing the same thing for us.
Should we not be bidding this? And AT&T's out there, and they're wanting business, and I don't know what. I guess that's why I said what I said is I don't know what their coverage is. I don't know if they could give us as good a coverage or not.
When we started, go ahead.
Should I mean this pretty good? Costs, should we not be bidding?
We don't have to. They're both on the state contract, so we can choose either one. All if right. They're government contracts, we are currently in a contract for another year with Verizon, so. If we don't change the plan, we're still under contract with them. Part of the complaints, Verizon engineer is actually going to drive to the areas that we've designated in the county that we're not having good coverage, that we used to have good coverage, and they're going to figure out why that's happening.
Yeah.
In the past, AT&T has not had good coverage, but they have increased and improved their coverage greatly. So, okay.
Well, we went with all the the sheriff came in and said, look, I have to have coverage throughout the county. And at that time, he said,
Altel. Altel was the only one.
And I haven't heard anything from recent. And besides that, we reimbursed most of those.
Yeah, they decided not to go on the plan, so then.
And I really would like if you guys consider that. I would not reimburse any more than what we pay for. And we'd like to encourage people. I think, do we? We had more phones on there,
they're going
to give us a better deal, Jim?
Actually, if we would, it's kind of hard to explain. we would have to buy more minutes, and buying more minutes would actually lower our per phone down. So yeah, but the more people, we would get a discount on minutes more than we get now. Right now we're averaging right at, basically right at our reimbursement is basically what we're getting, costing us per phone anyway right now. So it's about $27 for a voice phone if you kind of figure they're, if everyone pays a pro rata, it looks like a per phone share. So basically $26 reimbursement or all your cell phone coverage. And the other thing that Rick and I haven't spent any time with yet, but we're going to, is the county needs to take a position of every individual probably needs to reimburse the county, if nothing else, $5 a month, because there's some cell phone usage that are personal, and even $5 a month takes care of our IRS and any concern.
I know at least three of the electric officials that are reimbursing part of the BlackBerry. And if you do it on a percentage basis, IRS accepts that as, fine.
Right.
So
that's part of the policy we just got to finish writing. Lynette has a version done already that I haven't brought before you guys because we've made a lot of changes this year. That's something we've got to just work out. But that was the question that Rick wanted to bring up also, was this reimbursement policy. We have let me see if I've got my paper here. I think we've got 90 people we reimburse. It's a lion's share is, let me see if I've got it in this, hold on here.
Rick, is the $5, is that what folks have started reimbursing?
I think the elected officials, since they have BlackBerry, they're reimbursing $10. But, on a percentage basis for a voice phone, $5 a month would be more than enough, I would think.
More than that, yeah. Percent-wise. Because the biggest thing we're reimbursing...
The biggest thing is just having the phone itself. You're really just reimbursing for minutes, and so $5 a month is more than 20 minutes that they might be paying.
Because your nights and weekends are free, so they're really not paying for that. They're paying for any personal calls during 8 to 5.
Right.
That's why $5...
I mean, we could argue that with IRS, and we'd have no problem. They would accept that.
They would accept anything. Basically.
Yeah, basically, they would.
Yeah, they just want to make sure that we address it, and we're addressing it somehow, and we've talked about it, we just haven't put it into a policy, but that's still pretty reasonable for anybody to say, I got a cell phone for $5 or $10 a month.
And I believe if you explain that to the sheriff and the sheriff's department, I believe that you'd have most of those guys go that way. I mean, I can't imagine. I know most of them are spending a lot more than that plan they have. They didn't want to have to keep track of personal versus the other, but if we explain to them, hey, you can do this on a percentage basis, the IRS accepts that perfectly well.
In a per phone basis, it would actually lower our per phone, and ultimately it would lower our expenses because we're not paying $26 anymore. And I know from a paperwork perspective, you guys get bombarded.
And I'm confident that you can talk to Maggie and I guess Kathy processes Road and Bridge. Any of those ladies that process those, it's kind of a hassle.
So there's a lot of advantages if we wanted to explore that. But I guess I'm saying this is that we've got a new plan that they've proposed to us to save us money. We can make all these changes as we go along. My argument would be if we thought we're going to make those changes, it's best to make them up front because that may help us negotiate a little bit better. If we're going to add 20 more phones or 30 more phones or 50 more phones. And so...
How do we go about doing that?
Well, I guess I need some feedback from you guys of what you want to do.
If the sheriff is listening, you might see if anybody over there, because that would be a real key. I think he has several phones in that department, and if he was okay with that.
Jimmy?
Yeah.
I can sit down with Jimmy and see what his interest level.
When I visited with him, that was the reason that he liked the reversal. He didn't have to worry about keeping track of it. And here it is. So they can get the phone however they want to.
Right.
As long as you're going to obviously need to look at the bill, make sure somebody's not abusing it. If they are, you need to take the phone with them.
Right.
But it's going to cost them really $19, $20 a month to have the phone.
It'd be cheaper for the county.
Right.
And it'd be cheaper for the individual because, you're right. Most people are paying more than $26 a month for a phone, cell phone. And since they do a majority of the work with the IRS, I mean, even if you said $5 a month, you pay your $5 and you get... I can tell you, even the heaviest users we're not even close to hitting the average that we've got in this plan. The average we have in this plan, we're, as a county, we're below what they, Verizon, chooses as on a pooling plan. Normally they say, okay, each person's going to use 250 minutes per person of prime minutes. We don't average near that. So we're way below the average anyway. So I can take it as direction to go talk to Jimmy. I'm going to get with Frank on the push to talk. And then also the other guys are reimbursed. So what I can do is meet with those two departments and come back and tell you what I find out.
Okay. Did I understand you right that the plan, this plan or the new plan, the average cost is about $27?
Right now it's about $27 to $28. I'd have to do the math and all this, but it looks like about $27 to $28.
So it'd come down a little bit.
It would come,
make the change.
If we made the change, I can tell you what it would come down to. I believe it would come down below the $26 range.
Okay.
Which is what, but then what we also want to do is we'd also at the same time say, okay, every voice phone's worth $5 a month, every BlackBerry's worth $10 a month. That would go toward the bottom line also. That would help us. I mean, because that's...
And you're helping your employees too. I mean, I know some of them are going to be stuck in the middle of plans. We're going to have to deal with that.
But if it's a Verizon or Alltel, they dissolve it.
But other than that, I mean, I know most of the people get reimbursed $26 a month, paying out at least $50
a month.
And now they're going to be paying $5.
That's
great for me.
That's kind of where I was headed, Rick, is we need to, Frank's folks and Sheriff and anybody else out there, it'd be good for the employee as well as it may bring our costs down. And it would save all the bookworks mess that Maggie and...
Now, I'm not looking to add a whole bunch of more people other than the people we're currently reimbursing. Is that what your thought?
Right. Oh, yeah, not new people.
I would suggest...
There'd be some, I think, we got to pull out.
Look at
there's some
having some sort of policy, because I think we have some people that are even being reimbursed that don't really need one.
I saw that list, and there's a handful that I would want to talk about. I don't have their names in front of me, and I want to talk to the department heads first.
Who has that list?
I have a list. I've got all the packet of information upstairs for you guys.
I emailed it to you. Yeah, I think I did.
You did, but I have it all together. If you want me to just hand it to you upstairs in copies, it's...
With the $500 that you're talking about, and based on the numbers that we have, and the $5 per... normal phone and $10 for BlackBerries, that's an additional $450, so that'd be $950 per month in savings over the current plan that we have right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, I mean, it starts adding up pretty fast. It really, really does. Because we've got, like I said, we've got plenty of minutes in the pool that we don't even have to touch. It looks like we could add 15 more phones to the pool without even touching the number of minutes and we'd still be fine. So we could add 15 to 20 phones. I'd have to kind of see the ratios and stuff like that. But what I can do is I'll get with the sheriff, road and bridge, and then...
We need to sit down and review that list together, I think.
Yeah. I think what I can do is let me get some more information. I'll give you the information I've got, and then let me go visit with these two departments and go through the individual names, which we don't need to do over the microphone. And then come back with you guys and then make some suggestions. But I think ultimately it would save the county money. I mean, it could save the county, like Frank says, around 900 to 1,000 if we did a big change, which every little bit helps.
Appreciate your work on it.
All right, so I got that done here. So, all right. I think that's all I can find right now, so Frank can have some time.
We've got down here before he takes off. We got minutes. We don't have any minutes, do we?
Jim, we don't have any minutes, do we?
Huh. We do need to.
Executive session minutes. It's on my list, too.
Okay. Frank.
How much time are we looking at so I can adjust accordingly?
How about an hour, and then I'm going to take a recess no matter what.
Okay. Are we ready to go?
We have more than an hour, Frank. Don't we have more than there, guys?
I think we're good till 11:30 or so.
11:30, we're good.
We'll keep following today's agenda, and what I have is some dirt agreements here. These dirt agreements, we have four. We probably have a total of close to 20 now countywide.
And about a year ago, when we didn't have dirt agreements, I felt uncomfortable dumping this anywhere in the county without having this agreement. So Bob helped us out by creating this document that sort of holds us harmless of any damage we might do in transporting the dirt to people's private property. The big advantage to this, having a dirt fill agreement, a place to an alternate or many alternate spots to dump this excess, is that we're minimizing the travel time and the distance from where we typically used to dispose of, and or bring this back to our yard was a common practice, and then we would have to haul hundreds, if not a thousand, yards of material on an ever so often basis to create more room in our yard. One of the best dirt agreements that we have to date is in here, and that's MoDOT off of 65 is requesting that we allow them to have as much of this fill dirt that's really not usable to us. It spoils. they'd like as much as we can give them. So there's four copies in here, and the way it's been set up in the past, it just requires Mr. Pennell's signature.
Motion and signature, huh? So this is our standard agreement?
Standard agreement.
That Bob's reviewed. And
Bob reviewed it again a little bit this morning and said it looked okay.
We got Joy Aldridge, Paul Hankins.
Glenn Campbell.
Glenn Campbell. And David Jones.
Did we get those names again? Jim, you have them?
I've got two of them.
I'll hand them. We'll let you look at them. Is that all right?
Yep. I move that we approve the dirt agreements for Glenn Campbell, Paul Hankins, Joy Aldridge, and David
Jung.
Judd.
Jung, I believe.
Jung.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. I'll hand it to you as soon as he signs it.
Next up, we have several road easements that have been acquired recently. One is a Mr. Kenneth Severson, location Hilltop Road, AA-20B. The issue out there was a sightline issue, and I think you may be aware of this, Danny?
I'm not sure.
Okay. It's a sightline issue, and what the gentleman, based on the description, is providing to us is helping eliminate a sort of a blind corner, creating more of a sight line, and this has been a request from the neighbors for quite some time. So that's one of them. That's the Hilltop issue.
No cost?
No, possibly a fence. I'm not sure on this particular one. That's our standard practice.
So when will we know?
When will you know whether or not we need to build a fence there?
I just want to know if it's going to cost us and how big a fence before I agree to it.
Okay.
Is that wrong, Danny or Chuck? I mean, no, we kind of want to know up front, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah, but, who did you say the name was?
Kenneth Severson.
Okay. Do you need the names there for still?
Ow!
Exactly what part of the road is it?
I'll get a map and highlight it. In the future, I'll bring a map highlighting the area of improvement, and I'll also have whatever the agreement was to make that happen. And the next one is, we didn't have it on the agenda. I can bring it back next time if you like, but it was something that was previously approved with Reba Brown on 76 in Coon, 76 in Coon Creek. And it was the portion of the road that we had already purchased. You approved the purchase of the right-of-way, and this is the legal documentation and property description for that. So this just needs a signature also.
We need to see how the minutes are posted, but I bet you that's fine.
As long as it's voted on. We're good.
I think we voted on this. We had to vote on it.
It was voted and approved.
So he just needs a signature then.
Have you talked to her to see that everything is satisfactory with?
Randy talks to her a couple times a week. She's a rather friendly gal that we've accommodated all of her needs as far as a turnaround and driveway. There was a slight adjustment we had to do on that. There was some shrubbery that we needed to replace. And as far as I know, in speaking with Randy, she's satisfied with the progress.
Okay.
Do we want to talk about Coon Creek a little bit since we're on the subject?
We do. Today is, I just want to make sure I understand, what is today?
Today is the 16th.
16th.
The deadline was yesterday at 5 p.m.
5 p.m. So, what's the good news, Frank? This is not a reflection on you, by the way, whatever you tell us.
The good news is that they're probably 90-plus percent done with the work. There was another stipulation made by MoDOT last week in regards to striping. That was a change from the original plan, and I anticipate an additional change order to the tune of about $8,000. It's something that we tried to argue with MoDOT. What they're requiring is in some of the triangle zones and lane, in the turn lane areas where they're requiring diagonal hash marks, they are requiring to follow the MoDOT standard that's typically used on MoDOT highways and larger roads and heavier used roads than what the road that we're talking about. What they're asking for and demanding is that a 16th of an inch of pavement be ground out, and they use a product called 3M adhesive tape as a marking, which is more of a permanent marking than water-based paint, which you'd have to apply on an annual basis and sometimes twice a year in certain areas. So
this is a change. MoDOT's changed what they told us we needed to do.
That's open to interpretation depending on who you talk to.
How about talking to MoDOT? What did MoDOT say?
We did. When we talked to MoDOT, they said that our plans were not specific enough in what our intentions were for pavement markings. Our plans were to place conventional pavement markings being paint in all of these areas. So they've allowed paint throughout the rest of the project, except for these diagonal hash marks. They'd like to see the 3M product.
So, I'm going to ask.
There's a new inspector that came on the job from MoDOT 2 weeks ago. This was not an issue until 2 weeks ago when the new inspector came on board, a gentleman by the first name of Ruben, that discovered this and took it back to MoDOT headquarters, and that was the ruling. When I was made aware of it, I asked David Lundstrom, project engineer, to contact MoDOT. He spoke with MoDOT in the pavement marking section. They said, yes, that's a requirement. He, in turn, after that, spoke with Chad Sigafoos, which is one of our primary contacts when we have issues with MoDOT. And that's when the explanation came that it is a current MoDOT standard and that they were sort of being lenient with us by not having us do the entire project in this high-performance product or alternative product.
So let me ask you a different question. The road's not open, correct?
It's open. They moved the cone. Somebody told me this morning.
I've not physically seen it myself. I've heard it both ways. I can't confirm either way.
Is it open this morning?
I don't know. I just heard people talking. They're driving it.
It was my understanding that it was to be open this morning. There's some finished grading work to do,
which is not. Yeah, and you had kind of let us know the finish grading may be slow and some of the striping may be slow because of the temperature.
Right, right.
But the driving surface should be.
But we're looking at an $8,000 increase in what the bid with Voice was to do the job.
That's correct. I anticipate that. I asked that Great River Engineering negotiate and try and, you know, find out if MoDOT can do a cost share on this. It appears that we've hit a dead end, and what we're seeing coming forward to the $8,000 price is their negotiation. They
After the first of the year, I'd recommend that we have a meeting with whoever we need to talk to at MoDOT to get certain things done. We run into this quite often with changing of the guard. Everybody wants to make their paint mark. And so...
I mean, it sounds like we're at an impasse. They're saying, you're lucky we didn't make you do the whole project this way. Mm-hmm. This is our simple negotiation, and basically we're held over a barrel.
Right. What's sort of disturbing to me is that we're making considerable improvements on...
their road.
MoDOT and state property.
Yeah. Well, with this... I mean, my understanding is we've felt like this had to be done, and we've paid for it. And we've heard some, my understanding, some possibility that they'll reimburse us.
It's 2012 monies, yes.
So we're spending their money then.
Could we clarify that in an agreement that says we're going to be reimbursed if we are, as you said, Jim, we're spending their money and the interest on the money
right.
for a couple of years, whatever it was?
I think that discussion needs to happen, and it'd be nice if we could have something, a formal agreement, because it has been verbal to this point. We don't have anything in writing, and they were sort of the ones that offered that, so why not take them up on it? Why not move forward? And
I don't want to mess.
Because the last time we put it in writing, they said no, and that was the MoDOT barn. I just want to make sure. We put it in writing what they said, and they said no.
I visited a MoDOT barn yesterday off of 65, and that was a topic of discussion. As soon as I walked in the door, I was there on different reasons to look at equipment. And
I'm going to have some information for my commissioner friends pretty soon that you guys are going to be more angry at MoDOT than you are now. Just to see if you guys can handle how much anger. Because I got angry when I heard some stuff, and then putting it all together, it's... regarding the barn.
So it sounds like someone, possibly myself, needs to make the right contact with MoDOT, and
we got to get it striped, though. I mean, we got to stripe it. I mean, either way we look at it.
No, I'm talking about the long-term agreement for
that. Yeah, that's something. I mean, but the striping, we got to do it, don't we?
It has to be done.
And if we don't do it the way they want to do it, then what happens?
We have Reuben for lunch.
Wow. That's good. What does happen?
I don't know.
They might do it themselves and then bill us down the road.
Yeah,
that's typically what happens.
Go ahead and do it and hit them up for the...
So you're saying just go ahead and do the write up a change order? Do you have a change order for us?
No, I don't have it. I'm anticipating one in the area of $8,000.
We seem to be the only ones interested in the safety of the citizens that have to make that turn after they start the bridge.
I think I understand your frustration. I don't agree with your statement. I think they care. That's just, we look at things differently.
When we stick our money in it and they don't stick anything in it, I'd say we're the ones that's caring and they're the ones that's not.
But if they're genuine and they'll pay us back in 2 years, that says that they care. And
yeah, if they will agree to that.
Okay, so am I hearing that we're telling them to get us the change order and we'll pay?
I am. I'm saying get it done.
Yeah, we have.
We need it striped, and my thought is though, if we do it the other way, they'll do it and bill us?
That's common practice, yeah.
But the groundbreaking for the other deal, and when they start that bluff,
we
got to have it on there.
I believe your direction is get us a change over. And then.
In regards to liquidated damages, it's my estimation that the work to complete the job in its totality would have minimal impact on the traveling public. Do we want to try and enforce the $2,000 per day liquidated damages, or do we want to be lenient on that issue?
I anticipate, if they anticipate doing any more work for the county, I'd say we charge them the $2,000 a day. Is that what you said?
That's my question. Do we want to enforce that right now or not?
I would do it right now. I would.
I'd wait till they get finished.
Yeah.
Well, if we're going to move down that road, if I called them and let them know that those were our intentions to stick with the contract verbiage that stated that, it might
push them along.
Well, this is my concern, Frank. I have one certain reporter who called me or texted me every day that was nice and they weren't on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and nice to them is 50 plus degrees and
right.
No rain. Okay, they've got 10 plus days that they have proven Monday through Saturday that this construction company wasn't on site. So why wouldn't we enforce what we said we were going to enforce? The provision was in there strictly because of weather. Weather was not a factor for it. They could have just as easily been done 7 days ago than they are right now where we're sitting.
And we were insured several times that they were
on pace, it's on schedule, it's on schedule.
Yeah. So.
And there was absolutely no reason why it wasn't. So I would let them know that we're pursuing.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't. This is, I mean, that's why it's in the contract.
Can we not hold up with Canyon, gentlemen? I mean, that's standard practice most of the time.
Hasn't really
changed.
I think there is. That's usually common standard, yeah.
I don't think I'd do anything. I would think that they would expect that the contract is going to be held for the way it's written. And when they present their last bill, if they don't take that off themselves, I'd say we take it off and go from there. But I mean, that's me. That's business.
I'd like to comment that I'd like to ask Frank to call him, and from my point of view, it is business. It's clear as in the contract, what I'm understanding, and as a county commissioner, I wish they wouldn't have put us in this spot. I mean, there just seems no sense in why 10 days. I mean, the county commission, it sounds like I'm whining, but why are they putting us in that spot? I guess that's my question. Why have you done this that we have to say, yeah, we're going to enforce a penalty that's in the contract? That's a decision we shouldn't have had to make this time.
Well, especially with as many nice days as we
yes,
had, they're forcing our hand to call bluff. I don't appreciate it.
I agree with all of those statements. And one thing in the contractor's defense, the quality of their work, the quality of the construction work, appeared to be top notch. And Great Rivers inspectors were also impressed with the quality. Maybe not so much production, or we wouldn't be talking about what we're talking about right now, but quality-wise, I think they met the standards and then some.
All right, I'm going to make another
call. I was going to jump in. Don't we expect everyone who wins a bid to do that quality?
There were some...
Yes.
Yes, yes, we do.
I'll answer it for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
and I was thinking that that wasn't the comment I was going to make. But if I'm not mistaken, the contractor had a similar situation on a sewer project, and the sewer board voted to somewhat be lenient, maybe more than somewhat be lenient. Now I've lost my point I was going to make.
Holiday Hills.
Oh. So here we are as a county commission and local company, assume that they'll probably bid on other jobs, and now we're going to have to look at their bid next time, and maybe their low bid again, and then we're going to look back two jobs back, and it seems like they have flippantly just disregarded the opportunity to get the job done on time And so we're going to have to say, well, you know, it's important, very important, this job gets done on time. Are we going to give them the contract? I mean, I've shot myself in the foot many a time. It seems like they're shooting themselves in the foot and making it difficult for county government.
It's making it tougher on us than it needs to be.
Exactly.
We shouldn't even be having this conversation.
Exactly. Do we want Frank to make that phone call, or do we want to make that phone call?
Well,
the contractor in and visit with him.
Well, I think
maybe we would communicate better what's in our heart if we had him come in and talk to us.
I think maybe after the project, we were being told by the contractor in writing that it's going to be done in time. So, I mean, I guess to answer your question, your question was, are we going to look at enforcing the contract? This commissioner says we are. Danny's nodding.
We got to look at it.
Okay, so you need to let the contractor know that, yes, we are exploring our options in the contract because of the road not being open on time.
Well,
we're looking into the contract, yes.
Okay. I'd say it's substantially complete and possibly open at this time.
Okay.
And then okay, so we'll look at it. I understand what we're saying.
What about the striping? We need to go ahead and have them stripe it, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Agreement there.
So I expect a change order, but I also expect them to have this done in the next near future so that, once again, we don't have a lane closed when they start taking the bluff off. According to a certain person that works upstairs in our office, Coon Creek was not open this morning for business hours. Okay?
Okay.
I sent a quick email to see if the route was open, because that's the route they used to take, and it was not open this morning. So
Jim, we want our minutes to include the verbal agreement on the getting us a change order for the striping.
I put it down that you instructed Frank to go ahead and have it done.
Good, perfect.
And prepare the change order to comply with ODOT requirements.
Good.
The next thing I had on my agenda was, and your agenda, was the pavement rehabilitation story. This really is complicated, and we could spend an hour or more talking about this. I can go over this quickly. I can let you know what my primary concern is. I can spend as much time as you like on it. We can reschedule it for a work session, which I had anticipated to begin with.
How about we ask a bunch of questions and maybe we can get faster?
Great.
Why do you want to do it?
Why do I want to do story?
No, the rehabilitation program, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I guess I should look at the question first here.
What I have here is a map that represents every asphalt road in Cheney County.
This map is also upstairs in our office, is it not?
So what we're looking at, and asphalt being different than a chip seal road is gravel road, typically a gravel road built on some type of sub base. And then, probably just for a second or so.
Pardon? So, when your arms get tired, that's good enough. So, the asphalt story, the point I'm trying to make today is asphalt roads are very different than chip seal roads, and they require a different type of maintenance activity than a chip seal road. But also not trying to say that you can't chip seal an asphalt road, because that is a common alternative, especially in times of economic stress. If money were unlimited, you probably, and it's common practice nationwide, to overlay an asphalt road with conventional asphalt on top of asphalt. There are alternatives. Myself and Mr. Ryder and Randy have been meeting with Vance Brothers, one of the largest alternative surfacing treatment companies in the Midwest out of Kansas City. They've met with us several times. They have reviewed our project areas and sites and are in agreement that we need to do something with our asphalt pavements.
it's not uncommon that we sort of ignore and don't do preventive maintenance to our asphalt roads. We sort of build them, and then depending on the quality of the build and the sub-base conditions, 10, 12, 15, 18, 20 years later, we do a complete rehabilitation, and it costs us a lot of money. So the little package of information you have in front of you says a lot in it. It says that myself and Mr. Ryder have been working on a 20-year asphalt plan for Taney County. Our current chip seal plan is one that we spend about $1 million to $1.3 million, sometimes $1.5 million to keep us in the cycle of somewhere between 4 and 6 years on redoing a chip seal road. What I'm looking at here is that in the asphalt world, we could spend about the same amount of money to do preventive maintenance and to do total rehabilitation to the roads that are currently asphalt product out in our network. So that's the in the short conclusion, I want to bring up the fact that we do have a lot of hot mix roads. Most of them, probably 80%, are in the Branson area, and they need attention just like chip seal roads. After this discussion, I'd like to discuss the budget, where we're at currently, or as of November, the last run date for the budget, and let you see how I feel that there is some latitude or leeway in our current budget to accommodate or accomplish the goals of maintaining our asphalt surfaces. I'm ready for questions if you have any.
How do you do that?
Do
budget.
What?
You mentioned budget.
I will hand you a copy of both 245 and 250.
Pardon? If you've seen it, and you said you hadn't seen your highlights yet.
Okay.
Frank, since this issue came up a few weeks ago, been kind of noticing roads other than our roads, county roads, our roads too, but state and municipalities. Well, there's a lot of roads that fit this.
Absolutely.
A lot of asphalt roads in, right. in Taney County that
right.
are not our responsibility that
they need work.
Attention.
Right. What's really critical in asphalt, and in layman's terms, I say things like, it's painting your house before the paint starts peeling off the fascia boards.
Yep.
It's sealing your deck before the deck starts warping or the wood starts deteriorating. And in asphalt, the reason asphalt roads are designed with a 2% crown is so that water sheds to the side of the road. And if it's not built with the right geometry, then water will sit on the road, or the water will get through the cracks, and that's the number one cause for asphalt roads to deteriorate is that water somehow or another gets through the asphalt mat and makes it into the sub-base, and then the loading, being the traffic and or the heavy loads of 80,000-pound trucks, will start pumping that material, and that's what causes alligator cracking, that's what causes potholing. Just fatigue and oxidization from the sun will cause the drying out of asphalt, which is where you'll see the asphalt turn white as opposed to the rich black when it was brand new. Weather conditions such as freeze and thaw cycles will cause longitudinal and transverse cracks, and those are noticeable when you're driving down the road. You'll see long lineal lines that follow the path of the road, and then you'll see cross lines that happen on a normal basis. In some of the information that you have, you will have a detailed report on the roads that we have throughout Taney County, and you'll see the type of distresses that are noted on those roads. Those distresses need to be addressed. The common way to address them is to do crack sealing of the cracks, to remove the pushed or shoved or heaved portions of the road, to repair potholes, many different types of maintenance activities. And the ultimate goal is to maintain that surface, not only in ride quality, but in weatherproofing that so that you're protecting your investment. And my story today is we need to start protecting our investment. We can spend, if we were to go out today, I think one of these reports shows the immediate need today is close to $4 million. If we were to get everything up to par being having a good pavement condition number of 90 plus to 100, which is what you would get on a brand new piece of asphalt, to accomplish that, today we'd need a little bit over $4 million. But on an annual basis, which is a common way to do this, over 20 years, which is the common life cycle of an asphalt surface, we can do this incrementally with about the same amount of money that we're spending on our chip seal roads.
Which is $1.3 million or something?
About $1.3 million is the average that we're spending on a chip seal right now. And then the next sheet I gave you, or the next two sheets, I keep in contact. Rick supplies myself, I think probably other people, many people throughout the county, on a regular basis, I believe it's close to monthly, with a budget report sheet. And I have watched this budget. This is my second year here, completed my second year and some months here. My first year here was really to understand the programs, learn the programs, learn the budget, learn the individual line items, and try and create relationships with each one of you commissioners and earn some trust, understanding, and respect in how to maintain not only asphalt roads, chip seal roads, but all the other different things that a public works unit like the Road and Bridge Department does. We have, I believe, the largest workforce in Taney County. We have a little over 80 some employees, and we have a lot of responsibilities throughout the county that is, I could, you know, give you a list of, the list was 130 common things that we did in our work management program. We've whittled that down to about 50 or 60 things that we do on a very regular basis. And then we have broken that down into percentages of time that we do those different types of things. The things that we can't count on are what Mother Nature or weather will bring to us. And in the case of the last 2 years, we've had more FEMA events in 2 years, that being, I believe, 4 FEMA events. That's very, very uncommon, so you can't plan on that. The budget also reflects that we received a little over $1.4 million, $1.451999, in the county coffers road fund in FEMA reimbursements. But we can't count on that as a revenue stream, and we personally, I'd rather not have any FEMA reimbursements because you can accomplish more of your work tasks.
It, just for fun, if I could interrupt, if you look backwards in 07, it was $43,000, '08 $25,000, and those kind of reimbursements, so virtually nothing prior to this year.
Really. If we could, I don't know if you want to go line item through line item. If looking at budget number 250, we alternate, and I'm not 100% sure on the reason for this. We alternate between 245 and 250 on employee salaries. Every other year we go to the alternate number for our salary line item. Our salary line item is usually around $3 million per year to maintain the staff that we currently have. We have some large line items, equipment purchases, 250-30-015.
in the past year, we were allotted $500,000, and of that $500,000, we spent $225,000, and that was to purchase the chip seal machine that we have. So there's a carryover of $225,000 in that particular line item. The reason I bring this up at this point is to let you know that in previous years it was not uncommon to spend $1 million plus on equipment replacement in the county. Our current fleet that we have is in good to very good condition, with some pieces being excellent. Some pieces in our fleet have reached their normal life cycle in regards to what can be expected of a certain type of equipment in this type of environment, which is a harsh environment on not only a normal vehicle, a tandem wheel dump truck, or up to a large hydraulic excavator with all the rocky terrain that we have here. So there's a considerable savings there. In the contingency fund, we had $1.2 million this year, of which up to this point in time, which was the print date of this report, was November 30th this year. We haven't used any of that contingency. So that's $1.2 million that's there. We have our cost share that is on an annual basis about $450,000 to the 8 or 9 townships. I think there were 9 townships, and now there's 8. I think that money, although it's valuable and well used by the entities that get it, it was my experience or my belief that this year we almost had to ask those entities to come to us to ask for their allotment. So I'd like for us in the future to consider the needs that we have in the asphalt world. And when we talk about allocating that money, do we do it on an annual basis? Do we do it on a biannual basis? Do we do it on an as-needed basis? Because there's a good chunk of money there that we could use on our own network. So in just talking about equipment and the cost share monies, we're looking at right at $1 million, and those dollars in and of themselves could fund the majority of this asphalt preventive maintenance program that I've put before you. There are other numbers that are significant in this budget. Some of them are something we can plan on. Some of them have to do with economic times that we can't plan on. We, last year, in this budget, allocated $500,000 for fuel in Taney County, a good portion of that being diesel. And at the time that we created this budget, diesel prices were close to $4 a gallon. The petroleum world has changed, and it is very fluctuates on a regular basis. So far to date, we've spent $299,000 with an excess of $200,000 in that line item that could be allocated for additional road work. In some of the accounts, you'll see we're at 90%, 90-plus percent. In salt, we spend everything that was allotted. We spend 99%, and that was due to the year that we experienced last year and gearing up for. We are completely ready in regards to materials and equipment for any event that could be thrown at us this in the upcoming winter season. We had a line item of 250-50, 131 general construction. We had allocated $100,000 in there. There's still $99,000 in that particular line item. Taney Como Bridge allocated 2.5.
What line was that?
That item is 250-50, 156. Allocation of $2.5 million. and I think we have several in our office that are pending for a total of about $125,000. So the majority of that is still there. We could go through this line item by line item. It does fluctuate, but I'm comfortable in making a statement that I feel that we have the ability financially, if I watch this budget as I have this year, and that's diligently, and making conscious decisions to maintain an accurate budget at all times and know where we're at, I feel we have the financial capacity to do the preventive maintenance asphalt program. Yeah, and there will still be excess funding after that. It just
that the preventative maintenance is the hot
is the hot the hot mix story,
and that's 1.3
on an annual basis.
Okay, and the budget that Rick provided to us, where what line item is that?
Up on the screen, 10% budget.
Is it? It's not road oil. It's
I don't know.
It's not. It's not a budgeted line item at this point in time.
So you're saying you can, you're able to shave 1.3 out of your budget to create this?
That's my proposal right now.
What I'm hearing you say is if you're preparing whole 09 numbers and you're trying to put those in 2010, what you need to do, if you want this in and you want to look at the 2010 numbers, and you need to adjust those to come up with that extra
one. And I have done that.
That's what you'll need to do.
I mean, I have no problem if you believe you can shave your budget to allow this program, one commissioner here, and still maintain what we've got. I'm fine with that because what you're doing is doing more with less money. I mean, you're doing more things with the same amount of money, which I'm always fine with as long as nothing else suffers.
Right.
Preventive maintenance, I'm a big proponent of that. That's just a big chunk to swallow, obviously.
There's many ways to fund this type of operation. Not many ways. Revenue sources are limited. There's many different ways to use the revenue that you have, that the allocations that come in every year. Those items fluctuate on an annual basis. We do our best, whether it be myself, the commission, or Rick, all those involved that create a budget. We do our best to anticipate needs in an upcoming year, but with the trend that I've seen over the past 3 years and not having to, it's my understanding through Mr. Finley that we do what I term as bottom line accounting here, that it's okay for us to go over in any single line item, say in salt, we could go over $25,000-$50,000 if that need were there, as long as in bottom line accounting we had the ability to have excess funding in other.
We don't manage to the line item; we manage to the budget.
Right. So that's very different than some locations that I've worked where we had to do a budget transfer between line items to stay on top of it. So this gives us the flexibility to do the type of things that I'm talking about.
Well, have you seen what we've thrown in there? I mean, the thing is, this is where I'm, Rick, I'm just telling you where I'm wouldn't say struggling, I'm just trying to understand. The fund balance going into 09 was, can you scroll to the top of that? I've got it here, but go to very, very top. The fund balance going into 09 was $3.5 million, line D, correct? No, the one over. The approved. Is that right? Yes. That should be the same number.
Same thing.
Okay. And we're saying that the fund balance will have increased in 2010.
In 250. This is one of those that you have to consider both funds.
Right, because it's alternating.
So, I don't think you guys just got the fund balance report. I looked at those. But right now, this fund, at the end of November, had $4,785 carryover. But if you click back to 245, I think you'll see that fund was down almost that much. We combine the two, this one was 09, was $2 million, and it looks like now it's at $700,000.
Right.
So we actually have the total fund balance for the total of both of them has gone down.
That's what I'm showing, is the trending. The trend went down in 09.
By how much?
I'd have to
ask. Is it 1.3? So the balance, we spent more than we brought in for last year, and that's without the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that.
And that's without $1.5 or $1 million worth of equipment purchase.
Yeah.
So we would, because we have kept equipment at a high standard and a high level because of the need and the number of projects that we do. The number of projects that we accomplish and do now compared to even when I first came on is tremendous, five times the amount.
Now, it looks like we spent, if you go to 250.076, the 250, our contingency, we dipped in pretty heavy is what it looked like. And that's where the money, that's what hit us, 056.
Yeah. Right there.
We do.
076, contingency fund, down one more. There.
Right there.
Is that right?
No, we actually didn't hit those at all. You look at the actual.
Oh, it's on two pages here. That's why I thought we'd spent 1.2. And so we.
If you wanted to see the easy way to do it, Jim, would just do your run a percent on those out there.
Well, yeah, I was going off his paper.
Right.
So where did we go over then? I mean, my concern is, Frank, this is, I'm just not criticizing, but we didn't spend $2.5 million, we didn't spend $1 million on equipment, and yet we spent $1 million more than we...
I think the revenue stream was less than anticipated.
It was.
Right.
That's one of the things, the revenue was less. There were probably some things we did go over. The expenditures themselves, total expenses here, we budgeted $10 million. Was $6 million, and in order to look at operating expenses, you need to take out the contingency fund. Took the contingency fund out of there. You see they are
break even.
Yeah,
our revenue stream
less than what they actually planned to spend.
Okay,
so most likely the revenue stream wasn't what they thought.
So, but we still went down, and the fund balance still went down, but it wasn't because of overspending. It was because it looks like it's all attributed to the revenues just not being there because of the down economy.
Okay. Down economy, what, 5% of the, or right at 6% of the...
Sales tax is almost, I mean, it's probably at least 85% of
the
this,
so
of the total.
Tax or another type tax, and it is down.
Of the total.
Rick, you guys lost me here a little bit back. I've looked at 07 actuals, fund balances, added the two together, 245 and 250. In 07, approximately 11 million two. 08, we got 10.7 together. Our budget for this year was 5.8 balance. When you add the two together,
8.524.
5.250. You add these two, you get 11.2.
2.7.
You add these two, 10.7. You add our approved budget. This is what we thought we were going to end up with, was 5.8. But
we actually went in for that. And this is the beginning, Chuck. So in 08, we spent a lot of money on the bridge. Our balance went down a lot in 08, so that's telling.
Casey Road was 2.6.
Okay.
And 08, we that budget was reduced quite a lot. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. We spent it on things that needed to be spent more.
Done.
And, you know, it was a good expenditure for the constituents. It's what that money was there for.
Okay.
But
you're expecting us to end up, am I saying that we're going to end up this year around here?
I don't know if you've got that on there. Jim, can you?
Where do you
want to
go?
I want to look at the 09 actuals at the bottom of this. That's the beginning. You'll see the end. Right there. If you
45, 702, write that down.
Okay, I got that. 702.
702,004. So you're going to be about 5 million 5.
Which is 400,000 down from
that's
the previous
not
year.
Including December. It could be a little more, a little less, because, you know, depending on where they have more
spend,
there's more revenues.
So here our fund balance starting January 1, some about 5.5.
Which, and it's down from 5.9 from the previous, from the start of the year.
And because, let me finish this for good, and because we didn't have to pay for the bridge, we're going to end this year about the same as we did last year.
You're going to end just about the same as we started, close, yes.
As we start.
400,000 less, right?
Okay.
My calculations show 5.2 as a fund balance at the end of this year.
Okay.
5.2.
That's
worse than what I just wrote.
Those are rough estimates. And I came up with that number by highlighting major, high number, typically $50,000 or $100,000 plus. So, I would be comfortable in raising this number also. These, you can see what I highlighted. There are other line items that have additional funds available.
Okay. Got another question. Okay, we got a budget that we've decided on, which is up here on the screen. You mentioned $1.3 million to do this hot mix approval. That's what this all is about. Are you saying that $1.3 million
comes out of that?
Comes out of that? Is included in that?
Yes, that's correct.
So, doing what you're talking about doing, we'd still end up, the plan is...
At 5.2
at the end of next year.
Look at the approved and we look at the expenses you've approved right now.
That's right.
Suppose we've got everything right. Look at the bottom of the approved. Go down there, Jim, and see. And I haven't put anything in for contingency that I don't believe. We're planning $1.3 million. Check and make sure everything you need. Just check to go to the 245.
Okay.
And here, this is the approved. If we spend what I've got, it, what he's requested there, what you guys have approved,
less than
I didn't put any contingencies, you're going to go all the way down to
$2,070,000.
And we have what is our mandatory allowance percentage wise that we have to keep available?
I don't know if there's anything in the road and bridge. You can spend it all.
Yeah.
The general county revenue requires that we have a 3% emergency fund. And we normally budget a contingency fund in there, a certain amount of contingency fund in there. In Road and Bridge, you guys had at one time told me you wanted to keep a certain amount in there. I don't even remember what it was.
$4 million.
Okay. So.
That's where I was going, but that wasn't a percentage. That was.
That was actually Mr. Ratterman gave us that number. We asked him back before you got here, maybe. I don't know that. How much should we have cushion? You know,
in case a bridge goes out, or
frankly, you don't want to spend it all. That's for sure.
But to your question, I think Rick's right. I don't think there is any requirements because thanks, remember sitting in our meetings with other commissioners. And they spend it right down to the nickel, so to speak.
Some of the things we haven't discussed. So my 1.3 is an annual basis number that we're just using for calculations right now. That 1.3 would come out of the existing 5.2 or 5.2 to 5.5. That's where I'm finding that money at. Some things that we haven't discussed are emergencies, just like you stated. We also haven't discussed what I call capital improvement projects, CIPs. CIPs are typically funded also on an annual basis. You create what's called a capital improvement line item fund, and you allocate a certain amount of money in that fund per year, and you either use money out of that fund on an annual basis, or you let that fund build up to a certain number, as in the case with Casey Road. You let that fund build up to an anticipated number for a future event, i.e. possibly Fall Creek right now is something that's being discussed that people want that improved. So we need to even manage this budget a little tighter and more diligently and create a line item
to where we will have, right now it's called, we have contingency 1.0. When we have, and I've not discussed this with Rick, but when we have carryover or leftovers throughout the year, should we allocate, and we've done very good in some line items, should we allocate certain monies and create another line item for capital improvement projects?
Sure. It's been done for the last 10 to 15 years, and those monies are set aside for major projects that might come forward in the county. So and it's been done by commissions all the way back into the 80s.
Okay.
That's the reason we had the balance we had.
Yeah.
So what? What do we call it? The Road and Bridge Trust Fund.
It's always been budgeted as into the contingency.
Yeah.
Line.
Okay.
It's not a CIP. It's just
a capital improvement line in or someplace, but it's always been put into the contingency line item with the understanding.
Two-minute recess.
Let's take a couple-minute recess.
Okay.